Welcome to Implementing ESG into Real Estate, the podcast that introduces you to the authors of the book titled Implementing ESG into Real Estate Contracts, a guide and toolkit for practitioners from a European perspective. My name is Sabine Widowelt. I'm a real estate partner based in Denton's Frankfurt office. I fulfilled my dream to edit and co-author this book that connects two topics I am passionate about, real estate and ESG. And because my co-authors have such wonderful personalities and I have a passion for moderating, I'm delighted to introduce you to the personalities behind the book. Please join me when I meet my interview partner today. So, hello. Today I'm speaking to Jan-Jakob Pielen. Jan-Jakob, can you tell us a bit about your background and how you came to specialize in public law and energy regulation?
Hi, good morning, Sabine. Sure, yes. Well, when I studied law, which is quite a long while ago, I studied public law, and I was interested in both the criminal law side of things and the administrative law side of things. But then I thought, well, if I go for criminal law, I always have to work with criminals. So I chose the other side of things. And I did an internship at a medium-sized law firm where they did public law as well. And I thought it was interesting, but they had smaller matters, so more the household matters, so to say. And I thought, well, no, that's not what I want. So I joined an international law firm where I could do large projects. And the first cases I worked on were more infrastructure related cases and soil contaminations, large projects, and anything to do with permitting and environmental law around that. And very soon after that, I was involved in my first large scale energy project. And then I sort of got hooked, and I learned along the way on what it means to actually get an energy project permitted. And first of all, back in 2005 and around that time, it was a lot of still conventional energy projects, but soon it turned into renewables projects, and that was really interesting to me, and I still do that to today.
Wow, can imagine. And what drew you to join Denton's and lead the public law practice in the Amsterdam office? And one question I have myself, were you already part of Booker when Booker joined Denton's?
No, actually, that was I was at another international law firm before this. And then Denton's entered the Dutch market. That was at the end of 2017. They merged with Buckel, and they were looking for energy and environmental law specialists because they, at that time, didn't really have an energy practice yet. And that was right up my alley. So I thought, well, it's a mix of energy and environmental law. I saw the strong international practice at Denton's and the opportunity to actually build my own team here with my specific focus. So that really attracted me. And I must say it has been a very joyous experience so far. So
that's good, and so it made sense to join. And I'm glad you joined. Can you give us an overview of what you do at Denton's, of your role and responsibilities?
Yeah, so I'm a partner in the energy team, and I focus mainly on the regulatory side of things. So that is anything to do with permitting and environmental law, but also specific energy regulations such as the Electricity Act and stuff like that. So anything where the government also has a role, that is what I advise on. That is, in part, it's advising energy companies on developing energy projects, but it's also for a large part collaborations with other teams like the real estate team. And we'll get to talk about that a little bit more later, I think. But the energy sector is everywhere, so to say. So if we do real estate projects, there's usually also an energy angle to it. And if we do a corporate M&A transaction, it's very often also in the energy sector. So we're involved not only on the regulatory side, but also in the investment side and the financing side, as long as there is an energy or regulatory angle to it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing. And now you wrote a chapter in the book Implementing ESG into Real Estate Contracts.
of course, on energy and renewables. And what motivated you to join the project and be a part of that?
Well, I think you cannot really do a real estate project nowadays without thinking at least about renewable energy. So it's I think, a very important part of developing real estate. And it's also an important element of the investment decision if you buy real estate. So what is the energy performance of your building, and how does renewables impact that? So I was really enthusiastic about the fact that this book coupled real estate with ESG, and by that also the renewables angle.
And now I brought some warm-up questions after the introduction, and I will ask you to complete my sentences. The first one is, the person who has influenced me the most is?
I think there's actually two people. When I just started in law, I had a mentor who was a senior partner who used to start very early with his workday, and he never said, well, good luck with that, or lots of success, but he always said, have fun. And that struck me as a junior lawyer, that he was so enthusiastic still about the work that he didn't think about the success mostly, but mostly about having fun doing it. And he was successful doing it as well. So that was a good combination. Another one was a mentor I had after that, who was always very meticulous and very specific about, well, you have to be very careful that you draft it right, and that you have to focus on the quality of your work and never send out anything that is okay-ish, but not yet at the point that the client could expect. And there's always a little voice in the back of my mind saying, well, let's have another look. Is this good enough, really? So those two people, I think, have influenced me most.
A good combination. The second one is, the best part of my day is?
Well, it can be actually at any part of the day, but it's fulfilling to have a project actually complete. So sometimes that is at the end of a long day, but sometimes it can also be having an early start and thinking, well, we're almost there. You finish your work product and you send it out to a client. That can be a satisfying moment of the day.
Third, my proudest moment in my career was?
I think that must have been winning a large environmental matter at the European Court of Justice. It was all about emissions from an energy project, and we had the procedure was going on for years and years. And then finally, we were at the European Court of Justice. The Advocate General did not agree with our point of view, but luckily the Court of Justice did. So they took another view than the Advocate General, and we won at the end. So that was quite a proud moment.
Wow. Fourth, to stay motivated,
I try to keep on learning. So I think being in a regulated part of the energy sector means that you come across new elements of the law and new types of technologies that you work on every day. And well, you learn every day, and that keeps me motivated.
Number five, one thing I'm passionate about outside of work is?
I quite like to go for a run now and again. I'm not very fast, to be honest, but I quite like doing it. And
I bet you're fast.
No, not really, actually. But people here in the office always think that I don't speak about anything else than running. But that is not actually true. But it shows that despite the fact that I'm not very fast, I quite like doing it.
But I don't believe you that you're not good at it, but it really doesn't matter sometimes. It's just about the moment, being in the moment. Number six, and that's the last question to warm everything up. If I could solve one major global issue, it would be?
Well, that's an easy one for an energy lawyer. That's solving global warming. It's a difficult task, to be honest. It's that will take some time. But let's hope in our lifetime we will still see that we will actually limit global warming to the 1.5 degrees.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And now, going further to the person behind the law, what does a typical day look like for you in your role?
Well, I usually have quite a few meetings on a day. So that's often with either clients or with governmental authorities. If we're talking about developing a new project and we're starting to get the permits in place, then we usually have to negotiate with the government as well. If I'm lucky, I will have a hearing at the court as well. And when I'm really lucky, I also have a few hours in the office just to get the work done and work with my team. Here in the office to actually progress stuff.
And what do you like better, going to court or being on projects that are not court related?
I actually like the combination of both. It's a lot of my work is actually it starts off with advising on what do you need to actually get this project going, then negotiating with the government, drafting documentation that is required. And then after a while, it's often that we have to go to court because either neighbors disagree with the project or there are sometimes environmental organizations that disagree and they can contest the permits. And so we go to court for that. And if you then are successful there and you get to guide the project from the very initial steps of the permit application until the court eventually says this was okay and you can actually implement the project now, that whole thing, the whole process is really interesting to me.
I can imagine. A mix is always good. And then, do you have something you would like to share, a project that you've worked on recently you really enjoyed?
There are many, to be honest, but I really enjoyed working on a real estate project as well, which was a logistics real estate developer. And they wanted to implement EV charging points throughout Europe at their buildings, mostly for the use by themselves and their tenants. And we had to work together with an international team to draft all of the contracts for that. And that is also a part of the sector that's very highly regulated. So we had to make sure that for each jurisdiction, we implemented in a way that aligned with the regulatory side, while at the same time trying to keep all of the contracts as similar as possible for each jurisdiction to keep it workable for the client. So that was an interesting one.
Does it actually make a difference that we've got the EPBD that covers part of the EV charging, or is it like it does it is it still too much regulated differently in the different jurisdictions?
There are differences, especially if you look at the grid connections and whether or not you have the risk of becoming an energy supplier, which is not always allowed without a permit, and that's different in all jurisdictions. So there are indeed, of course, similarities in the different countries, but there are also things that are different. And for instance, between Germany and the Netherlands, it's different whether or not you would need a permit to supply electricity. And it's different whether or not you would become a grid operator or not, which especially in the Netherlands is a big issue because you cannot be a grid operator if you're not permitted to do so. So you
Yeah,
have
it's
to
a big issue
structure.
to get that permit.
Yeah,
And also, yeah.
it's quite difficult to get that permit. So you have to structure your projects in such a way that you're not actually building a grid.
And how do you stay updated? I mean, that's a lot of different regulations that you come across.
Yeah.
And how do you manage that?
Well, it's a lot of reading, and it's what I do tend to see, especially in our field, is because the work we do is so regulated that you have a lot of opportunities to read all the regulations and the case law while advising a client. So it's working on the job that also helps you keep updated. But besides that, of course, we do keep up with the case law and we do keep up with what is happening in Europe and which developments there are in the legislative process in the Netherlands as well. And that tends to differ a lot because we have a new government in the Netherlands and they are not as active yet as some other governments have been. And that in itself is a problem. So it's it's important to keep up. That's this is the way we do that.
Yeah, makes sense. And now we're already serious, but getting more serious. On specific projects relating to energy renewables and your advice, how do you help clients manage the complexities of the energy regulations? I mean, you stay updated, but what do you do to advise your clients better?
Well, that's an interesting one, actually, because normally clients come with you with a question that seems very straightforward, and you would think, well, have you thought about this? And then you can answer that specific question. But that doesn't necessarily help the client, because often there's so much more to a project than just that specific question. And because they haven't probably kept up as well with the regulatory developments as we have done, we are able to point them to the other elements that might also be of importance to their project, without wanting to complicate things for them, but helping them actually navigate those issues and think about more than just the question at hand that will help them later on to be successful with their project. And besides that, of course, we do webinars, we do briefings, etc. So we try to keep our clients updated more generally, but also we think beyond the question that is actually being asked, to make sure that they don't run into trouble later on in the project that we could have prevented for them early on.
And now going into just 2 to 3 examples on specific type of projects, because you mentioned that on your CV. Do you have an example of a solar or wind project that you've been involved in, and any challenges you overcame or you had to manage?
Well, it's actually a combination of solar and wind and battery storage. We've done a number of projects where the client wants to combine the three technologies, which makes sense because if the wind is blowing, there's usually not that much sun. If the sun is shining, there's usually not that much wind. So the combination of the two helps. And you can also combine that with battery storage capacity, and those three technologies together help alleviate the grid congestion issues that might exist. So in the Netherlands, for instance, and I think it's the same in many other countries, there's a lack of capacity on the electricity grid. There are a lot of people that want to develop new projects, but if you don't have any grid capacity, there's nowhere to go with the electricity. So that is why many parties want to combine the technologies, so you need less grid capacity to actually deliver an equal amount of electricity. And we help them navigate that. So one of the items that you have to think about then, how can you combine the grid connection for the three technologies? And who gets preference over the use of the grid connection? It's oftentimes it's different parties that develop the different technologies. And you have to make sure that you have a proper agreement with all parties, setting out who gets priority, under which conditions, etc. And then, of course,
Okay.
has to comply with the regulations. So we've helped various projects navigate that.
But there would always be a grid connection. There would never be a situation without the grid, right? The grid
Well,
connection.
there can be a situation without a grid, but usually it's more beneficial for the project to also be able to feed some electricity back into the grid. But if you combine the technologies, and especially if you combine it with a large off-taker, the requirement for the grid capacity is much less, and that makes it easier to actually be able to develop those projects. And we've also seen it the other way around, where a factory needed a large electricity supply, and they were not able to get the grid capacity, but combining it with a battery storage project, they were able to actually develop their factory, get enough electricity for their factory without getting a larger grid capacity.
And then you shared that you worked on developing a biomass power plant. And can you share or walk us through the process of developing that?
Yeah, well, it is a biomass plant is similar to many other projects in the sense that it requires permits, and especially from an environmental perspective. But the difference is that there are quite a few people opposed to biomass fired power stations because they think it's not actually sustainable. well, according to European legislation, it's still considered sustainable. So there are still parties developing it. It's also still subsidized in the Netherlands, at least the older projects that are already ongoing. But one issue that is frequently coming up there is nitrogen deposition. So that has an influence on nature values. And that is a hot topic in the Netherlands at the moment. So we do a lot of legal procedures about that and trying to safeguard the permits that were granted for nitrogen deposition from biomass powered power station.
And what happened there? Sorry if I interrupt.
No, that's no problem.
Well, what is the issue in the Netherlands? You just said in before we started that there's a new law in the Netherlands that's really a bit shocking for some of the clients.
Yeah, no, that's true indeed. So the Council of State is the highest Dutch administrative court. They have issued a new ruling where they said that projects that emit nitrogen need a permit. And it used to be that if you could set it off, the nitrogen deposition, against nitrogen deposition that was permitted earlier for another project or for the same project but in a different way of implementing it, then you didn't need a permit. So if you look at the project and after you've changed your project, the actual nitrogen deposition was lower than before, you did not require a permit. And now the Council of State says, no, you can still do that. You can set off the nitrogen deposition against what was permitted earlier, but you do require a permit to do so. And they also said you actually need such a permit for projects that have started before 2025. If they don't have a permit yet, you still need a permit now. So it has retroactive effect. So that has a huge impact on these biomass power plants, but actually also on real estate projects. So if you have logistics projects that have as an effect that there's more traffic emits nitrogen, that can have an effect on nature. And if you don't have a permit for that, you might require a permit now in the Netherlands. So we actually are working together with a lot of clients looking into the projects that they have acquired or developed in the past 5 years to see whether they have the required permits, and if not, how they can actually obtain those permits now.
So okay, quite, and that's for logistics and also industrial real estate?
Yeah, correct. Okay. Anything that emits nitrogen, actually.
Okay. So it depends on the type of usage of the site.
Yeah. But also construction activities can lead to nitrogen deposition. So sometimes there you might also need a permit. We have seen a lot of projects, especially in the real estate sector, where there was just agricultural land. The agricultural land that allowed manure to be applied, and that also leads to nitrogen emissions and deposition. So if you had a new real estate development on that land, you would say, well, the agricultural use is being stopped, so that lowers the nitrogen emissions. We have some new nitrogen emissions from the real estate development, but it's lower than what used to be allowed, so that's fine, and we don't need a permit. But now the Council of State says, no, you do need a permit for that. You can, whilst applying for that permit, you can set it off, but you still need that permit. And they also set some requirements for that permit that are quite strict. So it's not easy to get that permit. And, well, you might actually need one for a project that has already been developed.
Well, so that's really a challenge.
It is a challenge, yeah.
Yeah, so. Yeah, but you're there for the clients. That's really good. And you just shared with us that there's some items on real estate. But before we go on to the specifics of real estate, there's another item that you've been advising on, or a type of project, is waste to energy. Can you share with us what that means and what challenges you face?
Yeah, well, with waste to energy, you often see that either gas is produced from waste, and that can be household waste, but it can also be agricultural waste, or it can be a wide range of issues supplies, so to say. And what we see there is the general environmental issues, like nitrogen deposition, it's also at play there. But in addition, you also have the waste regulations. So that's an important item there as well. So how can you use certain waste streams? Is it allowed to incinerate it, or is it is there a better use to be made of the waste? So that is something that we advise on as well.
So it makes sense to be an advisor on environmental laws and then the specifics of energy. Yeah. Makes sense. And then now going over to energy and renewables and real estate projects, from your point of view, how do energy regulations impact real estate development projects?
Well, I think in a huge way. I think you cannot really do any real estate projects without thinking at least about renewables anymore. So both when developing real estate projects, you would have to think about how are you going to supply heat to the building? How are you going to supply electricity to the building? How can you be in compliance with the net zero objectives, et cetera? And also we hear from real estate clients that they actually think that they cannot let out a building anymore if it's not sustainable enough. So you of course have the energy performance of buildings that you have to comply with, but also it is for the companies themselves that develop those projects. They want to have a footprint that is in line with the Paris Agreement, and they want to have a building which can showcase their sustainability. And they have their own corporate sustainability obligations and objectives, and it's impossible to develop or acquire a building if it's not sustainable enough, for many companies at least.
Mm-hmm. And are there any recent trends or changes in regulations that real estate developers should be aware of?
Well, it's a constant stream of regulations, to be honest. So, but I think in the Netherlands, the supply of heat is important. There are legislative proposals in the Netherlands that relate to the supply of heat that will transform the heat supply in the Netherlands quite a bit. So that's important to keep in mind. But that will be different for any country across Europe. I think a general topic is that you have to comply with the Energy Performance of Buildings Directive. And that also means that you have to have a certain sustainability footprint for your building. And that often means rooftop solar, but not only rooftop solar. It becomes much broader. And what we see a lot recently is that the amount of electricity that is produced, or the amount of heat that is produced by a building, exceeds what is actually being used by the building. So we see more and more that companies start to collaborate with the parties in their vicinity. For instance, to supply residual heat to their neighbors, or to supply residual electricity to their neighbors, or to implement a battery project that is being used by various parties working and living in the vicinity of a building. So those collaborative projects and energy hubs, so to say, that is something that we see more and more.
Have I forgotten anything in relation to energy, renewables, and real estate as a question?
I don't think so. It is a broad topic, but I think if we look at real estate, it's mostly solar, heat, and battery storage. Those three technologies, and doing that in a sustainable manner, that is what we see a lot now in real estate projects.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And now going over to ESG and energy and renewables, I think it's a good fit, but what do you think? Does ESG make a difference? Does it make a difference to your work?
It does, of course, yes. I think anything we do, especially in renewables, is ESG. Of course, parties do it because they think that they can make money by implementing a renewables project, and that's also true. So it's not only for the good cause, but it's also driven by ESG, and not only by the obligations that follow from regulations in that are ESG related, but also because, well, companies want to profile themselves as being sustainable, and one way of doing that is implementing renewables projects, and so it's all interlinked, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Now, connecting this to the book, and I thought your chapter was really great. What was your focus in the book?
Well, indeed, it was about implementing renewables projects in real estate projects, and seeing it as an integrated part of developing real estate. And one thing that is important in doing so is actually getting a contract structure that works. And that contract structure should place the responsibilities with the party that is best able to deal with it. It's not only the real estate company itself that develops real estate and thinks, well, let's put some solar panels on the roof. It's much broader than that. And as it gets more complicated, you need more parties to help, for instance, with operations and maintenance, but also with the construction of the specific items of renewables projects. If you implement a heat pump, it's much different from implementing a battery storage project. And again, it's much different from implementing solar panels. And each of those projects has a set of parties involved and a set of rules that allocates the risks and responsibilities to the appropriate party. And getting that right is important to have a successful project. And that is something that we wanted to get across in the book.
Yeah, I thought that was really nice, looking through the different types of solutions and then how you can include that in contracts. I enjoyed reading it. Any thoughts for the future? Do you have any predictions for the future of the real estate industry in relation to renewable energy?
Yeah, I think the way of working much more integrated, that is something that I think will happen more and more. So the collaboration between parties and to come up with their own solutions in collaborating together, rather than being dependent on a grid operator or other parties outside of your control, that becomes more and more important, especially where there are projects that cannot get a sufficient grid connection. I think another thing is that, well, there's a lot of focus on low emission technology. One of those technologies can be renewable hydrogen, and that is an important energy carrier for the future. But it's a difficult one because there's no real market yet. So it's too expensive at the moment. So parties are working on it and it's starting to happen. But we need a bit more to actually get that implemented across Europe and across the world. I think it will be an important part of the future. But before we have that fully implemented, that will be a bit of a challenge still.
But it doesn't make sense for every type of project, does it?
No, it doesn't. No, but we have seen real estate projects that implement, for instance, heating through hydrogen. But it has, it's the market perspective that is difficult, but it also has the safety element to it. So you have to be careful that you don't have any explosions and stuff like that. So it has to work for the specific project. But it can also have logistic real estate, it can have an important role in rolling out the transport. So you could imagine that you have logistics real estate combined with hydrogen refueling stations where the trucks all drive on the base of hydrogen. And that is starting to happen already. So it does have a role. I think it can have a role at least in real estate projects as well.
Yeah, I've been hearing that in the logistics real estate industry. That market participants are thinking about that, and but you're the one that makes it happen. What advice would you give to developers going forward, to real estate developers, to get their practice more sustainable?
I think it's important, like I said, to take an integrated approach and not think, well, it's easy to put some solar panels on the roof and then we're finished. That will not do for the future, I think. The technology is evolving so much that there are so many possibilities that I think it's well, you should do more than just the rooftop solar. Try to combine it with battery storage projects. And the more they are developing the batteries, the better they get. And the more opportunities there are to actually have a project that works, not only from a sustainability perspective, but also from a financial perspective. You know, especially if you work together with the parties in the facility, if you have an industrial park or it's an office park with various buildings, you can share the electricity much more and try to create an energy hub, which will make you less dependent on grid operators, will make you less dependent on energy suppliers, will save you costs and will actually create an income as well.
So even if there's a backlash on ESG, it still makes sense to do these projects.
Definitely. I think it's not only the sustainability element of it, it's also making money with it.
That's good. That's important. do you have any final advice you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well,
anything I've forgotten? Sorry.
Well, we've discussed most, but I think one thing that is important in developing, especially these integrated renewables projects, is to make sure you get the contract structure right and to make sure that you put the responsibilities with the party that can handle it best.
And that would be the key takeaway, right, for everyone to take?
Yeah.
So Jan Jakob, thanks a lot, and thanks for being on this project and also on this podcast. It's been really fun, and as you said, fun and attention to detail is what drives you. I remember a client once said, please do the project like Jan Jakob did, and please ask him how he did it. And now I know even more why the client asked us to do it that way. So thank you so much. And
thank you.
I'm looking forward to working together again in the future.
Likewise. And thank you very much for including me in this.
Dear listeners, we thank you for listening. If you don't want to miss any episodes in the future, subscribe to the podcast on all common platforms. You can find the link to the publication Implementing ESG into Real Estate Contracts in the show notes or at dentons.com. I thank you for listening.